almost a year ago, I picked up a book called Springtime for Snowflakes. And I read it and I thought, this guy is either a covert op that's making us all think that he is on our side, but he's actually not. Or he's the bravest guy I think I've ever met. And he turns out, I mean, this is what he wants me to believe. He turns out to be a guy who is really, truly brave and honest. And his name is Michael Rechtenwald. And he was a professor at NYU who lost his gig at NYU. It had nothing to do with him taking on the system. They made that very clear, did they not, Michael? That
yes.
You started tweeting.
That's right.
And what were some of your tweets?
Well, I mean, I tweeted things like, you know, social justice warriors. There's a bunch of little Stalins running around, you know. Just imagine that and then wake up and realize, yes, you're in that world. You have a bunch of Stalins running around. They're just Stalin, just weirder. It's SJW. So I was trying to get at the idea, like, right. We were dealing with a bunch of, authoritarians all over the place. Things like that. And I talked about some of the craziness going on campuses, for example. You know, the establishment of segregated dormitories, you know, where they were, you know, African-American-only dorms, you know, like a reversal of things that were supposedly progressive, you know, or moving forward. And the Halloween costume insanity, where you couldn't dress up as anything, you know, that might be appropriating of some culture. Meanwhile, you have the left dressing up as a new person every day.
Right.
I mean, so they're changing their identities on the fly.
Right.
But nobody can wear a Halloween costume for a night.
And you were a guy, you were one of the most popular professors at NYU, which is not exactly a conservative school.
Mm-mm.
You're not a conservative or weren't a conservative.
Not really, no.
You actually wrote white papers
for
communists.
For Marxists, yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And you wrote that. You told me you wrote those things because in theory, right?
Yeah.
In theory,
yeah.
Communism is great.
Yeah.
But in practice, it never works.
Right. I was with like a group that called themselves left or libertarian communists, and everybody on the other side of the middle thinks that's a complete oxymoron, of course.
Right.
But they believe that like the workers of their own accord, without like the vanguardists or as the leaders, like the Bolsheviks, taking charge, that if it all has spontaneously erupted from the bottom up, then it'll be workers will have like control of everything, and it's just wonderful. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's no greed, there's no evil, there's no bad people amongst the workers. They're all pure.
They're all pure. Yeah.
They're all saints. I mean, so what it is you're born whatever you know rank and class you're born into in the world, according to the left, that basically sanctifies you in effect. So that you know. It's just a very weird theology.
Right. And you were part of it.
Absolutely.
And when you realized that people were serious and they were starting to go for actual communism.
Yeah. Well, actually, when they were starting to go for people's heads, you know, starting to talk and act and attack people in the way that like the Red Guard did in the Cultural Revolution and under Maoism. From 66 to 76 and just insanity where they just routed out everything and they started destroying all the cultural artifacts, the historic, anything that represented historical memory, tradition, convention, it had to be razed to the ground. And I saw the same things happening here, like literature being thrown out of the curriculum. You know, of course, we see statues being defaced, all kinds of historical memory being erased. It's to me, it started to seem like the same.
What was Mao's purpose for doing that?
Well, he was very self-motivated. First of all, he was trying to eliminate any competition that he was having within the party. So if he got all these Red Guard, and they were all students, very, very, you know, gullible and enthusiastic and crazy. And he got them like, hey, guess what? You can go in and basically overthrow the classroom. How would you like to go in and kick your teacher out? Or how would you like to put them on trial?
That's happening.
Yeah.
That's happening now in America.
And so he actually turned the populace against the state, against the very social order itself, to dissolve it so that he would have absolute supremacy.
Which, who is the Mao of our time? How is this? How is this? How is this happening?
There's a lot of mini Maos. I call them mini Maos. It's like sort of like Minnie Mouse.
Yeah.
Because there's no big figures like this that are able to. I mean, you have the North Korean leader, but I mean that doesn't count. We're talking about like in our world, there's a few people. I mean, there's a lot of people.
So where's it coming from?
It's coming from these people that are tapping into their moral superiority and their authoritarian impulses. And their moral probity. They think they're absolutely right, and they think they have the truth on their side, and they're on the right side of history. This is the key. If you're on the right side of history, because they think history is going in a direction, happens to be the direction they want it to go in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is called Whiggish history, because that's how the Whigs thought in Great Britain. They thought that, you know, there was a progress narrative of history. And of course, the progress was all going the way that towards their types of policies. And this is the same thing these people hold. They hold the progress narrative. It's all going their way. Basically, anything new is good, including any new genders, anything. But anything not new is cis or X.
Right.
You know, and just like in the Soviet Union, they started calling, you know, during the Great Terror, anybody that was designated as an ex, that is your ex-official, ex-this, ex-that from another, mm-hmm. from the earlier regime, you were going to the gulag. So I say that cis is kind of like the equivalent of ex. It's mm-hmm. a way of marking the antiquated who must go down.
How the obvious question here, Michael, how do these people who say they're fighting against authoritarians,
yeah.
how do they not see that they are exactly what they despise?
It's amazing. If I was a cartoonist,
yeah.
I would draw a picture of an Antifa character who's mm-hmm. looking in a mirror,
mm-hmm.
And he sees on his forehead a swastika. Okay, mm-hmm. but, you know, because they are absolutely replicas of
they
what
are.
They think they're against.
They are the brown shirts or the black shirts.
Yeah, it's very frightening. But what's frightening about it is the unself-consciousness of that. How is the self-delusion so thick that you could actually be the incarnation of what you think you're against?
A lot of people will say that it was people like you work around or may mm-hmm. have been
yeah.
on the campuses
yeah.
that are just filling people's heads with gobbledygook.
I can't even tell you. I mean, it's so sad. To me, it's so sad what's happened. I think that, like, for example, what happens to college curricula, they've turned it into, like, basically it's a moral program based on social justice as the main creed.
Uh-huh.
And they've rid anything that doesn't fit. You know, like, for example, at SOAS in London, it's a university that they threw out all white male philosophers from the philosophy curriculum. Okay?
That's all Western philosophy.
That's everybody.
Yeah, that's
in
everybody.
Fact, there isn't, you know, maybe it leaves Ayn Rand, but I mean they're not going to teach her.
No. Uh-uh.
So there's not much left. And, you know, whatever reason, still, you know, these are people that contributed a great deal to our society
yeah, yeah.
and our culture.
You read Plato today and you can learn a lot.
Oh, yeah, you learn. And I mean, however you want to think about it, you know, there's a great connection between Plato's Platonic thinking and Christianity, for example.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great deal of connection there, whether you think that, you know, Christianity borrowed from it or it was a precursor that sort of set the stage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It works either way, but it definitely is deeply foundational to the way we are.
So how many people, this is the argument I think people are having in themselves or... Unfortunately, it's keeping them blind because they think that there's not enough people that actually believe in these things. And so they're going to, you know, this is just going to stop at some point. And you do see evidence that people are waking up
yeah.
because they're pushing way too far.
Right.
But how many people do you think on the campuses, if you look at it, you know, through polls,
mm-hmm.
70-80% mm-hmm. are buying into it?
Yeah. What I heard was at NYU, the students would tell me that the worst places weren't even the classrooms. It was the dormitories where the students were self-patrolling each other in the social justice creed, and they were correcting each other if they, you know, were saying or doing or acting in a wrong way according to the creed. So there was a lot of like censorship going on within the dormitories and stuff like that, and like a lot of, you know, like blackballing students, and it was sounded like a horror show. And I was living the worst of it as a professor who's not, you don't get out in 4 years,
mm-hmm. yeah.
unless they throw you out.
Right.
You know, they only have a short term there. It's not going to last forever. But, you know, I had to live with that. And it's spooky.
All right. More with Michael Rechtenwald. We're going to talk about his new book that is coming out that I think is tremendous, just tremendous, and something that everybody needs to read. But if you're like me, you're going to need to read it two or three times because it's very, very deep, but really important. We'll talk about that coming up in just a second. So, Michael, I think a lot of people think, where the hell did that come from? Where did that word come from? All of a sudden, you know, the patriarchy is something we're talking about, and we never talked about that before.
Right.
And the patriarchy has no gender. Well, then what is it?
Yeah, they like to keep it nebulous, you know, because then they can move it around and put it on anybody. But the patriarchy was supposedly, you know, of course, domination by the patriarchs, by male, you know, authority figures and so forth. And the West does not have a patriarchy. Okay, this is very clear. There are
the Middle East. The Middle East has a patriarchy.
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. That is a patriarchy. And interestingly enough, the Western feminists have no problem with
the Mid-Eastern patriarchy.
Yes, they don't critique it, and they actually will scold you severely if you talk about the hijab and anything like that. So it's a very weird thing. The reason why they keep it this way, like, so the patriarchy has no gender, so that they can paste it on anybody. Particularly what they like to do is people that are supposed to be in a victim class and don't behave properly for that victim class category, they go after those people with more vengeance than they do anyone. And that's the scariest thing. Like this, you know, the president of the Heritage Foundation, African-American woman, Kay Jones, I think it was her last name, she was elected to be on the advisory board of Google. Right. And because she is conservative, the Google, what I call them, the Red Guard within the Google woke force, as I put it in the book, they went mad. I mean, and they called her everything from, transphobe and all that to a white supremacist. They went after her with more vehemence than they go after the oppressors. So this just shows me that they're not interested in serving the subordinated, and I'm not saying there aren't subordinated people in this world. What I'm saying is the left uses them. They're just props.
Oh, yeah. Historically speaking, do we wake up from this before it's too late?
Let's just say this. The waking up is going to be scary for a lot of people, and I think it's going to have to be, like, they're going to be woken up by knocks on the door, in effect, metaphorically, you know, at night. You know, just like when the
they start coming for them.
When the Cheka starts coming to your door and hauling you off to the gulag. Not effectively in the exact same way, but the more people that are going to be ripped down, called down, ripped, me too'd, whatever.
Right. The people that are right now being kicked off of Twitter, kicked off of YouTube, Facebook, everything else. They include people like you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they include people who are effective and from, you know, formerly from their group.
Yeah.
When you wake up and come out and go, wait a minute, this is really dangerous. They stifle you. And at some point, I mean, the Niemöller poem is true. At first they came for the trade unionist, and I wasn't a trade unionist, didn't care.
That's right, exactly.
Until they come for you.
You know, I wasn't even talking about my type. I'm talking about, like, African-Americans, like, for example, Candace Owens, who doesn't behave properly according to the victim
Kanye
class.
Kanye West.
Yes. And, even Clarence Thomas. I mean, it just would not conform, and so they, he said, he went through an electronic lynching.
Yeah.
Now it's digital lynching and digital disappearances, which is really what scares me.
Yeah, the depersonization.
Yes, depersoning or unpersoning.
Yeah, unpersoning.
Because once everybody is, and first of all, they've made the public sphere basically irrelevant or limited to the digital sphere. So there's nowhere to really get to anybody with any message outside of the digital sphere. Then they have complete control over it, and it's privatized, so there's no state sanctions of anything. There's no rights. And so they're just erasing any opinions that they don't like.
And what's crazy is so many people in Silicon Valley that I've talked to, they all talk about the end of the nation state. They want it.
Definitely.
Because of that,
yes.
There is no constitution. There
That's
are
right.
no laws. They make the laws, mm-hmm. and they'll be able to shape society any
yeah.
way they want.
Yeah.
I'm a capitalist. I've
yeah.
never been, one that jumps on these, anti-capitalist, anti-corporate kind of bandwagons. But these corporations are truly becoming frightening.
Yeah.
And they're telling us what
yeah.
they're going to do. I want to get into that with you when we come back. We're going to take a quick break and back with Michael Rechtenwald. He's got a new book out that is talking about the digital ghetto, if you will, the walls that are being built. And it's pretty frightening and pretty amazing and something that everybody should read. We'll get into that coming up in just a second. We're talking to Michael Rechtenwald. He is a former professor at NYU, a guy who knows the left because he was inside the left and is now using their language, exposing them to, and I think hopefully to many who are on the left, exposing and having them see, oh, crap, I'm on the wrong side.
Yeah.
Tell me the name of your book.
It's called Google Archipelago, and there's a subtitle, The Digital Gulag and the Simulation of Freedom.
There was another book,
yes.
similar in title, and if you know what it is, it's a little breathtaking to use that title.
The Gulag Archipelago.
As opposed to Google.
That's correct.
Obviously intentional.
Yes.
You're going to get a lot of pushback.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. And you say that Google is doing the same thing that the Soviets were doing, just in a different way.
Yes. I mean, I say very clearly from the start that, listen, when I say Gulag and I'm comparing the Google to Gulag, I'm not saying that it's a prison camp that will have necessarily, assassinations, forced labor,
mm-hmm.
Slavery, in effect, that's what it was,
mm-hmm.
interesting for a worker's paradise,
yeah.
And so on and so forth. I'm saying that as the Gulag was the most articulated high-tech power structure and control mechanism in the world at the time, so Google Archipelago, as I call it, is the most widespread, powerful, and far more penetrating and far more extensive system of control and power.
We had dinner the other night with a group of people,
yes.
and China came up, and there was somebody at the table who just would not give that China is this horrible monster.
Yeah.
Because, hey, they're using the free market and they're pulling all these people up.
Mm.
But the way they're using the digital surveillance
mm-hmm.
is truly terrifying.
Yeah.
Most people, he was a very smart individual.
Yes.
He didn't even really understand what was coming. And let's talk just a little bit about the silencing of voices
mm-hmm.
and where that's headed.
Mm-hmm.
We're already seeing the silencing of voices. We're seeing credit card companies and banks starting mm-hmm. to get involved and saying, this person, you can't do business with them anymore.
That's right.
When you have lost your status.
Yeah.
So you cannot be heard.
Yeah.
You can't access the mainstream conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You're being erased as if you've never existed. All of the stuff you've ever written or said or done or anything, gone.
Yeah.
And now you can't access financial services. Aren't you in a gulag?
This is a frightening prospect. I mean, you know, there's of course the surveillance. There's the tracking of everything you'll ever do. There is the, you know, there's going to be, basically everyone will have a digital signature. When you walk outside, my argument is that we are going to be in the internet. This idea of going on the internet will be so quaint.
It's the internet
and anachronistic.
Things.
I mean, the internet is going to be everywhere. It's cyberspace everywhere, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So everywhere you go, you're going to be a piece of data that is tracked. And every move you make will be known. They'll have, in China, they have this. They have digital fences for people whose social credit score
mm-hmm.
is not high enough to leave the city, for example, mm-hmm. or even, say, the neighborhood.
Or you go grocery shopping.
Yes. So there's an immediate alert sent to the proper
right.
authorities, and they pick them off the street.
Right.
You know, so China is exporting their AI already.
Mm-hmm.
The city of...
They're trying to get all of the countries to buy into it.
The first place that bought into it, interestingly, is a town called Darwin, Australia.
Mm.
They bought into the smart city idea. They said they were more concerned for their safety, that safety was such a concern to them, that I guess they were willing to forfeit liberty entirely. And that's pretty curious. We have some people in our country, you know, in our history that our tradition
yeah.
have talked about that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, Franklin said you will lose both and deserve neither.
That's right.
So bring it to Google
yeah.
and show how Google is doing this.
Yeah. First of all, I want to say that Google is just an emblem, right? So
yes.
that's why I call it the Google Archipelago. It's
the whole chain of islands.
Yes, that's right. There's big digital, and it consists of all of these gargantuan digital.
People don't talk about Amazon.
Right,
as
they're part
this
of
way,
it.
But they are part of it.
They're part of it.
Yeah.
It's harder to work them in, but they're doing things that are very similar. They're, you know, if you don't do business like they want, if you don't
Correct.
Practice this, that, and the other thing, you're.
Correct. But they also, I mean, they are going to be. In their own words, a delivery company more than a sales
yeah,
company.
Right.
They're going to just deliver it before you buy it.
That's right.
Which means they have to have so much information on you that they can predict you 95% of the time.
They're using they're going to use algorithms to sell immediately to people products they haven't decided to buy yet, but the algorithms have said they will buy.
Right.
And they'll send it to your house. And
which leads you to the question, where is the tail and where is the head?
Mm-hmm.
Because with Google and all these algorithms,
yeah.
they're going to be marketing to you. They're going to know you so well,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be marketing to you.
Oh, yeah.
And before you know it, you want that product that's just arrived at
mm-hmm.
your door.
Yeah.
But do you really want it? Or have you been shaped to want that?
Yes. There's a big question of whether you've been led down an algorithmic trail
mm-hmm.
over time through particular processes of presenting this, that, and the other thing to you and excluding many other things, of course. And a lot of the things, of course, that are excluded are alternative ideas to theirs.
Sure.
I mean, let's not forget, they have an explicit political agenda. They're not some neutral or collector and distributor of information. They have this agenda to make the world better, improve the world, whatever, in their sense, which is, you know, based on, again, the social justice creed all the way down the line. And so this is the steering they're doing. They're steering you through algorithms. And so there's going to be the idea of whether you're, you know, there's going to be a question about free will very shortly.
Oh, yeah, very shortly.
Whether it exists, because... if you're being algorithmically led and steered and all your choices can be predicted in advance by these algorithmic
mm-hmm.
patterns,
mm-hmm.
then this causes a philosophical problem, but also the question of, like, who's running me here?
Correct.
Yeah.
And you know, if for anybody who's listened to me for a long time, I used to talk about Cass Sunstein and you know, his work on Nudge. And it's always bothered me that political people were using Nudge, that we were being nudged as a society just by putting the French fries in the back and the apples in the front. Well, this is a much more sophisticated nudge to where you won't be able to find it. I mean, try to find some information. If you can't find it after a couple of searches on Google, you just think it doesn't exist.
That's right. It's buried. They have blacklists for everything. Now, I want to say one thing to qualify where I'm coming from. I'm not a Luddite. I'm not a technophobe. I worked for 5 years in an AI lab as a writer in the Robotics Institute at Carnegie Mellon while I was writing my dissertation simultaneously. So, like, I know where this is, where this all came from. I studied it. I was at, you know, the Newell Simon. And,
I love this. The technology that is coming our way is going to either enslave us, unlike any time ever before.
That's right.
Or it's going to free us, unlike anything anyone's ever imagined.
And, you know, I say this is this, these dystopian possibilities are just that. I'm not saying this is inevitable. If I thought it was inevitable, I wouldn't write the book.
But Michael, it is becoming more and more inevitable because it's moving so fast.
Yeah.
And unless people wake up right now and educate themselves on what is really happening, we're just going to accept it one thing after another, because it's going, it's 1984 is happening in China. We're Brave New World. It's being wrapped up in things that we like.
That's right. Toronto has already bought into the Sidewalk project of Alphabet, Google's partner. Sidewalk is like the smart cities of China. It tracks every, it says that, and in fact, they'll not only know what kind of porch furniture you have, how long it takes you to cross the street, what exactly your habits, and every move you make. And they're buying it because they think it's wonderful that there's so much knowledge to be had. But when the knowledge is about, like, intimate details of people's lives, and that it's contained in the cloud in this very centralized place, which is, like, you know, owned by a private organization, and they're also, they're changing the laws of Toronto to do this.
I have to tell you, I don't know why we haven't passed a law already saying my private individual information about me belongs to me.
It's not going to be possible. That law is not can't happen. We're already carrying along a digital package that's basically our history. They're going to have we'll have a signature, which I think will be maybe part genetic and maybe part digital, that will also be attached to an informational package that effectively is every move you've ever made. And then, of course, we'll have predictive algorithms connected to it.
We're getting to the precog crimes of
that Minority Report.
Yeah, Minority Report.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they're going to be saying, this person is 99.9% likely to do this now or soon. And so what are they going to do? They're going to have a rationale for picking them up.
Unbelievable. Michael, thank you so much. Michael's going to be joining me for another podcast. If you want to see the podcast he's already been on, it is really, truly fascinating. It's his whole story about trying to get out of the matrix, if you will. And you can listen to it wherever you get your podcast. Just look for the Glenn Beck podcast and Michael Reckenwald. Mike, when does your book come out again?
It'll be out in mid-August. So, you know, but pre-order now. It's going to be out soon.
It's really an important book, and really, really, you're a great writer. Really, well written. And you can find that at Amazon. Michael Reckenwald, thank you so much. Pat, what'd you think of Michael Reckenwald?
He's interesting, like always, and really ballsy.
Yeah.
He says things that nobody else will, other than maybe you. And
well,
people
don't
like to say that
stuff. Attention to the things. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to meet Ballsy, the guest next hour?
Mm-hmm.
He just infiltrated the Muslim Brotherhood, and he's a Jew. I mean, courage is contagious, and we're going to share his story coming up in just a second. Have you seen that the digital erasing of the history now of Bill Clinton and the plane with Epstein?
Oh, they're definitely worried, aren't they? Erased? Oh, are they scared?
Oh, my gosh. Wikipedia has already changed everything. They've taken Bill Clinton's trips out. He had 27 trips. He has only said he took 4. But, you know, we have the flight logs. You have to file the manifest. So they have the flight manifest as part of record. They also now have the pilot's manifest, where there's some real trouble because he said, "My Secret Service was always with me." We now know, because of federal documents, which flights he took and which ones he didn't have Secret Service with. And on those flights, the pilots, in their own logbook, kept a log of everybody that was on. And every time Bill Clinton was on without Secret Service, there were underage girls on the plane.
Oh, my. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Oopsie daisies.
Yeah. Yeah. This very well might be payback for the Trump lies. But we'll see, because there's also some speculation that these guys are never going to pay for their crimes because they are so well connected. We'll see. We'll see. This is the closest I think the Clintons have ever come to having to face justice for the things that they have done. This is the closest.
This might be the one taboo that still remains, that you can't have sex with underage girls. You can't do that. I mean, I think as a society and a civilization, we can still agree on that, right? I hope we can.
I don't know. If you're Clinton, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
We'll see.
If you're really, really well connected and you have others, Alec Baldwin, involved in these things, how many people are going to be taken down by this? And I mean, this will shoot right into the heart of the Democratic establishment.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to be real damaging. We'll see how strong justice is compared to politics.
You're listening to Glenn